You're listening to Conversations That Matter with Daniela Cowan every Friday at 5 here on Radio Northern Beaches 88.7 and 90.3 and also streaming on rnb.org.au and the TuneIn app. Today I'm joined by a very awesome and interesting guest, Sarah Tolmy. So just to give you a bit of information about Sarah, Sarah is a life and love coach and a consultant assisting individuals, couples and families to celebrate, create, navigate, learn, heal and grow through all life and love milestones, transitions, changes, challenges and losses, which is a lot. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you, Danielle.
It's lovely to have you in the studio. And we're going to be talking about, like I said before the song break, we're going to be talking about love, relationships and marriage. We're going to be talking about everything to do with that. And it's actually going to be a two-part series. So we'll be talking with Sarah this week. And then next week you can also tune in at 5 p.m. and the following Tuesday at 4 p.m. Where we're going to continue our conversation about this topic area. So first of all, Sarah, when we're talking about love, relationships and marriage, what are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about the whole gamut of life. There is no place in our life journey where love and relationships don't come into play, and well, marriage is fairly significant as well. It's not necessary these days, but it's still something that's very relevant and sacred. But in all aspects of our life, the skills of relationship is essential. And I think love is really the energy of life.
Absolutely. I think in the absence of it, it's not a pretty picture. So you work with people to help them to navigate their relationship. So who are the main people that come to you to discuss their life, to talk about their life?
Well, primarily a lot of my work is as a holistic celebrant. So I talk to a lot of couples who are preparing for marriage and marrying. I do pre-marriage relationship coaching, but I also am a trained marriage therapist. So a lot of my work is with couples who have been in relationship for a while and either are finding themselves in crisis and challenge and helping them nudge their way through those times with new skills and insights and repair. And I also work with some of my couples that have come back to me after a few years of marriage to just help them through the next phases and milestones as well. And sometimes my work also involves helping couples or one of a couple navigate out of a relationship.
Sure. And I think it's such important work. There's a big taboo, isn't there, around seeing someone, like seeing a coach or a therapist to navigate relationships, isn't there? I mean, I can imagine, you know, I think the sign of a healthy relationship is to come and see someone like you, like personally. So, you know, what sort of people, like, do you find that when people come and see you, we will get into meat and juice, we've got a whole lot of things we want to cover, but, like, do you find that when people come to you, like, they're scared about coming to talk to someone, invite someone into their world?
What often happens, Daniela, is that I will sometimes see one party of a couple first who's unhappy, and often in that coaching partnership it's clear that there's some significant relationship issues, and the best way to deal with those is with both parties together. And so sometimes it works where we then bring in the second party and we work as a couple coming to see me. And I have to say that most often, if it's with heterosexual couples that I work with, it's the woman coming.
I can imagine that.
And but they often believe and think, without even asking their partners, that they wouldn't want to come to therapy. And it would often be that sometimes the male partner is dragged along kicking.
Sure.
But once they're in there, it's an amazing transformation and pivot that happens. Finally, this man might have the capacity to have his his voice heard, to really hear in truth what his partner needs and wants.
Sure.
And there's a real fast softening that happens and gentling into the process when they know that it's going to be of mutual benefit and there's a real tangible outcome of a better relationship, a thriving marriage afterwards.
Mm. I mean, because that's what everyone wants. Everyone wants to have that successful marriage. And I think sometimes we're lacking something that we don't even know we're lacking or missing, or whether it's communication, which we're going to talk a lot more later. So, you know, in this session, we're going to be talking about, you know, why a relationship's so hard and why divorce rates are so high. So what do you see, like what is the current relationship marriage landscape in Australia?
Well, just a little bit back from that, I think we're emerging into a new era of relationships. For a long time, the energy of relationships has been about an economic marriage.
Sure.
Marriage has been around through history to perform a role, which was to create stability amongst a group or a tribe and bring children up and to maintain and preserve resources and keep people safe. And that's a great grounding and foundation of what marriage might do. But in 2018, there is a higher demand out of the relationship landscape. We want an intimate and we want an emotional partnership, and we want to be able to be in relationship that allows us to continue to self-actualize and go into our best person that we can be. And that is really an emotional marriage, a marriage of intimacy, and that's what everyone in essence wants.
Sure.
But I truly believe that it takes a very particular and high skill set to actually achieve that. And I think we're still stuck in the skills and the mindset of economic marriage, which we learned from our parents, which they learned from their parents. We learn our relationship skills and frameworks from our family of origin, and we need to evolve those learnings now and skill up into what's demanded and required of us in an emotional, intimate marriage.
More and more people are waking up, aren't they, to wanting that. I can see it everywhere. I think women are vocalizing it more. I'm sure there are a lot of men as well that are searching for something more, like they don't want to just be cast in that role as breadwinner. And I know, you know, in many ways their roles are becoming redundant, that particular role. So everyone's, you know, trying to find this new place. And I think you're absolutely right. With the skills, like that is, we're not skilled up, are we, enough? We're not, you know, I know for me, like thinking about entering into marriage and knowing that I'm going to need to navigate this whole thing that, you know, I've had a little bit of training in personal development, and yet there's this, you know, it's like going, it's like climbing this massive mountain. It's like, well, how are we going to do this? So, you know, in terms of where people are at the moment and getting them to where, you know, ultimately that relationship that thrives. What is that gap that you see?
I think there's three elements to it. There's absolutely the continued commitment to your personal growth and development. That's your me. And the next step is understanding that inside relationship, you're in the environment of a we. And in that environment, there is a balance between growing and maintaining your self-expression and also an agreement and a commitment to support and encourage the other. And so there's a balance between absolutely maintaining accountability and responsible for yourself and your happiness and your growth, but also knowing how and when to prioritise the desires and the needs of your partner.
And is that where you see that there's lacking, or is it both? Like you find that both there's work to do for different people?
Well, that's absolutely a reciprocal flow. Both of them need to understand the me and then the responsibility of the we, and then really work to create the conditions and the behaviours and work on the skills that are going to continue to sustain and nourish and grow that environment of your relationship. And I think it's the skills that really need a lot of work and articulation amongst couples to show them how to communicate, to show them how you actually live and love intentionally and consciously, which is all easy to do when you're falling in love and in that romantic phase. You know, if anyone's heard about those five languages of love, we're doing them all when we're falling in love. We're giving gifts, we're having physical contact, we're saying lovely affirming things to each other, we're doing things for each other, and we're spending time together. They're all the languages of love. And then over time we maybe default to our primary, and we don't consciously bring deliberate volition and practice to our loving, and so that's a really big part of it as well, the consciousness of loving each other.
Absolutely. And all of those things, you know, I think, like you said, it is a very conscious act. I don't think it's something that just comes naturally, and it's something that we need to work at. So when people come to you, and you talked about this a little bit before, what space are they usually in?
When they're coming for relationship repair and help, they're usually in crisis. And it's a tricky road to come back to repair and reattach with couples if they come too late, if there's just too much damage and pain. It's a really hard road. However, it does happen. It can happen. There's three, again, I work in lots of threes. There's a pathway to reattaching couples, and it's firstly we're looking at atoning, and then we attune them, and then we attach them again. So it's about hearing the problems and working through what the pain and the emotions have been experienced, working out a way to clear that, and to, it's an old word, but atonement, it actually is a
quite a powerful one.
Powerful one to really atone, and then to attune back into your other, into your partner. So that's attuning again to their needs, to their desires, attuning into yourself and what yours are, and becoming really skilled at communicating that with each other, and then building the attachment again, building the friendship, building the love, building the trust and the commitment. So there's absolutely key phases and pathways couples move through to work through their relationship. I would love to see a day when everyone, before they get married or move into more committed and lifelong partnership, that they do some really intentional training around emotional mastery, communication, positive conflict, and continue to work on their relationship throughout the different phases of their life, because there's pressure and stresses from life
at different points of life,
different times of life. You know, you mentioned that word thriving. When we're under stress and pressure, our ability to thrive in relationship becomes really compromised, and we switch back into survival mode. And those survival mode skills are the relationship skills that we learned from our family of origin, whether they're good or they're not so good, and we start to turn into different people and behave. And
like how?
Yeah.
Like, what would be an example? What would be an example of that? Like, how would someone, when they went into survival mode, would they be abusive at the most extreme form? Would they be withdrawing or stonewalling?
Absolutely. Yeah, they could withdraw, they'd go into their cave, they'd not talk about how they're feeling, they'd try and just kind of tough it out themselves. That's the classic avoidant. Or someone who, on the other end of an attachment spectrum, when they're really stressed and pressured, will become much more highly anxious in relationship and become, you know, inverted commas, quotation marks, needy, or provocative or act out.
And all those are signs and symptoms that there's something going on. So there's like a life stress,
mm-hmm.
or maybe there's something going on in the relationship, isn't it? Like
that's
some
right.
stress inside the relationship that's not being addressed.
Yep, that's right. And all those stress points in life, like having your first child or training into a new job or moving house or moving, all of those trigger really personal responses. And so where I talked before about you have an accountability to be you and manage you and be aware of yourself and what's going on inside of you, and then you've got an accountability to the relationship and to the other person to share that and to work it together and to kind of almost teach your significant other, your partner, who you are and what you need through times of difficulty and stress. You've got to teach each other. You've got to work it out together.
That's something I don't think many people are doing that. I don't think many people know to do that. They might feel selfish or, you know, am I allowed to address my needs? Should I be expressing my needs? Will it seem selfish? I think especially in our culture, there's almost an experience of like it's about fulfilling the needs of the other, even though if we're not fulfilling our own, how are we going to do that? And I think even knowing that it is about, like, that's a vital component, addressing one's own needs, and then the we in the relationship as well. That's fantastic. I think that's...
I do say to my couples that need is not a four-letter word that's a dirty word. It's a good word because we need to be able to understand and have a relationship mindset that why are you in relationship if not to to serve each other, to nourish each other, to support each other, to grow with each other, to affirm each other and to mirror each other and to agitate each other. And so there is an implicit, but it needs to be explicit, understanding that when you enter into a relationship, it is all about meeting each other's needs and desires. Needs and desires.
Fantastic. All right, well, we're going to go to a song break, and when we come back, we're going to speak more with Sarah Tolmie about love, relationships and marriage. You're listening to Conversations That Matter with Daniela Cowan every Friday at 5 here on Radio Northern Beaches 88.7 and 90.3, and also streaming on rnb.org.au and the TuneIn app. I've been having a conversation with Sarah Tolmie about love, relationships and marriage. Just a little bit about Sarah for those that are interested. Sarah is a life and love coach and consultant. There's a lot of words in here. Let's see if we can do this. She assists individuals, couples and families to celebrate, create, navigate, learn, heal and grow through all life and love milestones, transitions, changes, challenges and losses. We've been chatting about relationships and, you know, what's missing in many relationships, what's required in many relationships, skills that many people don't have. So let's talk about in this session, let's talk about what gets in the way for couples. What do you see are the things that, you know, if people knew, if they knew it would make a difference, or, you know, as a coach and therapist yourself, what do you see that gets in the way?
Well, firstly, there's three broad areas where...
Three? That's surprising.
I know. I can only count to three. three areas that really most things can fit into that are what I call the killers of relationship. It's negative emotions, build-up of negative emotions.
Mm.
It's unmet needs, again, that word needs. And the third one is loss of self. And they really, when you understand those three things, then there are very clear antidotes and skills and pathways to avoid them. If we look at the first one, negative emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So this is about being real with what you're feeling and being accountable for your feelings, not kind of feeling them and projecting them onto the other and blaming them for them.
Mm.
Your feelings are yours. So it's, you know, one of the big areas with couples that I work with is emotional literacy, emotional capacity, emotional communication, learning how to understand, identify our emotions, how we move through them, how we work with them, how we share them with the other, how we own them, how we're accountable for them. Our feelings are our friends. You know, they're telling us information. They're there to help us auto-correct back into centre, back into alignment. So it's about being emotionally literate and mastering your emotions.
So how do people do that? Because a lot of people know that, you know, they need to be in touch with their emotions. And I think sometimes emotions are scary and people suppress them because they, you know, if they have a feeling of anger towards their partner, they feel scared to explore that anger, or towards their child even, or so how what would you suggest for people who are wanting to get more in touch with their feelings and their emotions?
Well, sometimes it's even as basic as starting to just write a diary to understand what emotions you're feeling. Some people can't even identify what emotion they're feeling. They're just feeling something.
Stress,
and they
anxiety.
Go straight to the behaviour to kind of get rid of it. So understanding what you're feeling, maybe even writing it down in a diary, just naming it, right? Just this real basic starting point with my coaching clients is to just being able to name their feeling and get some language around it and get some understanding about your behaviour. And there's a very simple tool. This is getting a little bit therapeutic, but I am a big fan of tapping. If anyone doesn't know what tapping is, there's so many resources on the internet to find out. It's another word for tapping is emotional freedom technique, and it's a way for you to just very quickly do a self-therapeutic technique to talk through, walk through, feel your feelings, and also then tap into some internal resources that are going to help you move that feeling through. Once you name a feeling, once you just talk about it and talk with it for a moment, it will move away. It will go. It'll give you some information and some intelligence and not intensify. You can de-escalate feelings really quickly using tapping. And then sharing your feelings with the other. I mean, if you're in that relationship with someone, you've got a mutual responsibility to share what you're feeling with each other. How else are they going to learn about you? How else are they going to know you? How else are they going to build that emotional bond and intimacy if they don't get invited in?
And I think there's a difference between sharing your feelings and your emotions in a way that dumps it on others and then in a way that owns it. I know whenever I share an emotion, if I have an emotion and say it's activated by someone else, like someone does something and I feel an emotion, if I communicate to them like, when you do that, like, oh, I'm really angry at you right now, and I put it on them, the way that they respond versus if I say I'm feeling like I own it, like I'm feeling really angry right now, I'm just trying to discover why I'm feeling really angry right now, that it invites them in to walk alongside me and discover it with me.
Perfect.
And it's a completely different conversation, and at the end we feel more connected. They feel like they've been invited into my world, and it's completely different. One is like the blaming for me. It's like, I really notice the difference. Like, I'm in blaming. I want to put it on them. You know, it's all their fault. And then the other one's fully owning and inviting them in. Wow, what a difference. So I think that...
You're bang on there. It is such an important pivot. You know, you're going to feel that feeling anyway, and you've got choice and a decision pathway how you're going to do it.
Sure.
You can project it onto another and blame them. You know, it's one of the other real strong symptoms of a relationship in crisis is criticism and blaming, and it feeds a cycle of defensiveness, and it can spiral into an even more terrible cycle of contempt and stonewalling. Or you can own it and you can share it and you can work through it. There's a fight model that I share with couples on how to have positive conflict. And instead of Sarah versus Daniela and you're facing off from each other, it's Sarah and Daniela versus the problem. And that sideways pathway where you walk together, you talk together, you share, and you work through it together.
That's completely different. Just even having those two, like, am I doing the me versus you, like who's winning? I think that's really common in relationships. Like, am I winning? Are they seeing my point of view versus, okay, how can we get through this together? almost like holding each other's hands while we navigate this. I think a lot of people think when things come up in relationships, it has to be fought out, or it has to be like one person wins. Mm. And I don't think it does need to be that way.
It can't actually. There's research. My marriage therapy uses the Gottman method.
Oh, John Gottman.
Yes.
Oh,
and fantastic. They've done years and years, decades of research on this. And they're pretty clear that about 70% of our problems and our conflicts are not resolvable. They're not resolvable, and they're not meant to be. I tell my couples, you don't have to resolve everything. For those things that are resolvable, yes, you follow a pathway of compromise and decide on a course of action, and you both, you know, commit and agree to that. But for the 70% that you can't resolve, the goal is to stay in dialogue, stay connected,
and
either dissolve it or dialogue or both.
Mm.
Dissolve the emotion and stay in dialogue. That's all you can do. You're going to have different parenting styles. You're going to have different personalities. You're going to be different for the whole of your life. You're not meant to change and become the same.
Sure.
So it is dialoguing.
And that's the thing, that's the bridge, isn't it?
Mm.
Because there's two completely different people coming together. And I think a lot of people think the goal of a relationship in a way is to become the same person. I think that's where a lot of people have a loss of identity, because they think I either have to become like them or them, or my perfect partner is them being exactly like me. Like some people describe their perfect partner who's exactly like them, so that they don't have to navigate, they don't have to communicate, they don't have to work, build those bridges.
That reminds me of a funny story. I've got a good friend who I coached into a relationship, and she's going to get married in a couple of months, this gorgeous man. And I remember a really crucial point in our coaching. I said to her, you're not trying to find someone exactly the same as you. That'd be boring.
Mm.
You've got to appreciate that you're going to be different, and you want that different. You want that polarity. You want that opposite.
Variety.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to agitate and nudge you in areas that might be uncomfortable sometimes, for sure. But that's where the growth happens.
Mm. And so we will kind of come back to, so what makes relationships fail? There's so much here, and we will get as much from Sarah as we can.
It's very juicy.
So in terms of like what makes relationships fails, like the killers of relationships, so we've got unmet needs, negative emotions, loss of self.
Mm.
So in terms of like the loss of self, this is where this would fit in, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So many, one party of a couple will come first and want to change their other into being exactly the same with them, or not accept them for who they are. And I think that there's an intrinsic energy, an energetic signature, a nature and personality of a person that you meet and you fall in love with, and you don't want to change that. It's wrong to ask someone to change for you.
Sure.
And whenever you are asked to change, you do it resentfully. You do it with your heels dug in a little bit, and you do lose a bit of yourself. What I like to re-language for my couples when you're in that way is that there are some adaptations that you need to learn to be able to meet your partner's needs and desires, to make life easier and better for them and nicer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not asking of you to change who you are, but it is asking of you to maybe learn a new skill, communicate a little bit better, know when to turn the corner and turn towards your partner and reach out for them and put them first. So it's an adaptation, not a change that's going to be asked of people.
Mm.
And an adaptation means a new skill. It means growth.
Mm. Okay, great. Well, we're going to talk more about this when we come back from the song break. We're going to talk more about why relationships fail, but then also going to what are the danger signs of a relationship under stress, challenge or crisis. You're listening to Conversations That Matter with Daniela Cowan every Friday at 5 here on Radio Northern Beaches, 88.7 and 90.3, and also streaming on rnb.org.au and the TuneIn app. I've been speaking with Sarah Tolmie. We've been having a really interesting conversation about love, relationships and marriage. And just a little bit about Sarah again for those just tuning in. Sarah is a life and love coach and consultant. She assists individuals, couples and families to celebrate, create, navigate, learn, heal and grow through life and love milestones, transitions, changes, challenges and losses. So thank you for continuing to join us in the studio and having this conversation. It's a really fascinating one. I'm personally very interested in it. I'm in a relationship and we're having conversations around marriage at the moment and navigating that and all the stuff that comes up from, you know, what I think about marriage and what they think about marriage and all of that. So we're going to continue the conversation where we left off when we were talking about what makes relationships fail, including unmet needs, negative emotions, and loss of self. So is there anything else that you see in terms of what you can see, what makes relationships fail?
Well, if I could mention a classic, this would be known maybe by a lot of people and certainly a lot of couples therapists. They're called the Four Horsemen.
Yes.
And these are classic signs of a relationship in challenge and stress and potentially crisis. Mm. And when you start to see these emerge and hear the language of them, you may recognise when they're coming up in your relationship, or you might see other couples display these behaviours. I'm going to talk about all of them first and then we can go a little bit deeper into them.
Sure.
Criticism and defensiveness. So when couples start to speak in a dialogue of criticism and defensiveness, that to me is a real warning sign, where there's blame, when there's projection, when there's criticism, they are not skillfully communicating their need. Under every criticism, there's a need not being met.
Sure.
But it's being communicated in a clumsy and hard to hear way.
Mm.
And when someone criticizes you, your natural kind of arc response is to either come back and defend yourself, so natural, or you may lob a criticism back yourself.
Sure.
And these are really easy behaviors to fall into under stress, and they come in pairs. And then the criticism and defensiveness on steroids, where you really see a relationship in challenge and crisis and when they're really starting to hurt each other, is stonewalling and contempt. So that's where it gets really personal, name-calling, attacks, where there's very quick and fast withdrawal, the stone wall goes up.
Like you say one little thing and the wall goes up.
The wall goes up, there's no listening, there's no heart listening, that's for sure. And then you're really in a highly escalated, highly charged atmosphere of contempt and no connection.
Mm.
And there's been a lot of studies that have been shown that, for example, in relationships where there have been, so this is very end of the spectrum, but abuse and a battered partner has stayed, and when they're finally ready to leave, the contempt will be there and they're out the door. And so that's very at the end of this extreme spectrum. But contempt and stonewalling happen in so many partnerships. You can recall maybe you've seen partners bickering at a dinner table and their eyes are rolling and they're calling each other names.
Saw it yesterday. It's so interesting you should say that.
Mm.
I was at a table at a cafe and right in front of me, it was like it was preparing me for this conversation, right in front of me there was a family and the parents, while the kids were on their phones because they didn't want to obviously listen, the parents were just bickering and the guy was much louder and the girl, you can see she was trying to calm him down, but both of them were like, and then she walked off.
Mm.
Sorry to interrupt, but I just saw that yesterday. Yeah.
Well, there can be even more subtle than that, but you have to be really careful that you don't fall into these, because they're classic relationship survival skills as well. And the good news is there's very clear antidotes to each of these, and that is where we go into the skills development for couples to learn how to, you know, how do you articulate your need without it sounding like a criticism.
Sure.
And you learn skills about gentle startup. You learn to talk about your feelings using I statements and express your need in a positive way. So instead of, Daniela, you always put the towel on the floor and never pick it up. I know.
No, that's joking.
and that's a criticism. But underneath there's a need. I'm just so busy. I can't quite get round to cleaning after you today. Could you please put your towel up on the rack after you're done? That would help. That would be really good. It's totally different energy.
It is. Or like I need a really beautiful space when I come home. It makes such a big difference for me, like creating that environment. And what I find is like people want to, like especially your partner, generally, your partner wants to provide things for you. It's like, but sometimes they just don't know what you need. And then in our head, we get angry, like why aren't they aware of our needs without them even knowing?
That's right. And then we go straight into the criticism. But you've missed the first step where you've not been accountable for your feeling and your need and express that healthily and skillfully, rather than just launch straight into the criticism and the attack. And then with the defensiveness, it is understanding, you know, don't be the victim and ward off a personal attack with reverse blame. Take responsibility. You know, if under every criticism there's a legitimate need being met, then if you're on the receiving end of that, then there's some accountability maybe that you can take to make things better, to take the edge off a behaviour that's really irritating your partner and make an effort. So it's about taking responsibility.
Just on that one, that's a really big one too. It's something that I've only learned in the last 9 months to a year, that when someone, even if they're not communicating in a way that maybe I would want them to communicate, like, but they'll give me some feedback about a behavior that I'm having. Maybe it's someone that I'm living with and they say, look, when you do that, it gets me really annoyed. And my initial thing is, I don't want to hear what you're saying. But then I've learnt, okay, so I'm having a reaction. I'm just going to put that to the side. And what are they actually saying? Can I receive what they're saying to make their life easier? Because my commitment to them is I do want them to feel comfortable. I do, but when I am defending myself, or when I'm like, don't give me that, I can't address what they need. And that's been a really big shift for me. And I actually find like I'm not losing anything in that process. I always thought like that was them winning in some way.
It's a total gain. You're learning something about yourself, and you're given the opportunity to take agency and action to grow into a better you. And that's what the whole we environment invites of us.
Sure.
It's to help make each other better. And you're not going to express your need and your feeling if it's not a safe place, so that, you know, you did a really good job there to receive that. And just take a breath, receive it. Don't take it like a personal attack, particularly if it's not being delivered as a personal attack, and work out how you what's the adaptation? What do you do here to kind of make it better, make you better?
Absolutely. And then so in terms of the four horsemen, that's pretty complete for that?
Well, yeah. When we go into contempt and stonewalling, it's like criticism and defensiveness on steroids. It's a much more escalated, faster, hotter version of those two. And there's some skills there about building the culture of appreciation, learning how to do that self-soothing, how to not let your stonewall go up, and for you to just kind of completely vacate responsibility for the conversation and the relationship, but stay emotionally safe. Work it out together. So they're all skills. They're all skills that are easy to learn, and in time easy to practice. Totally changing the environment of a relationship.
Great. So what do you do if one of the partners is more emotionally intelligent than the other? What is the... So say there is... the woman comes to you and she... I think women, I don't know, is this a generalization? Women are generally more emotionally intelligent. I think there are some men that are very as well. Is that not great to generalize like that? I'm sure you're like, no, don't go there.
I have to be really careful around that because it...
Well, because women are allowed to.
On a really gross, big level, yeah. Yes, that generalization is true to a degree.
Mm.
But sometimes it can be... the opposite way, and certainly in same-sex couples, you can't kind of make those sort of generalizations and distinctions. It's about what is unique to the personality style, the communication style, the attachment style, the conflict style of each person. And yes, there are some things that can fit into sort of general big buckets, but then when we get a specific couple in the room, then it's really bespoke and tailored to...
Absolutely.
Who are you guys and what are you doing?
Yeah. Okay, great. Okay, Sarah, well, we'll have to wrap that up for today. Thank you so much for joining us in the studio and having this conversation around love, relationships and marriage.
Thank you. It's been a joy.
And you can join us next week. We'll be chatting again about this topic area. You can tune in 5 p.m. next Friday. That's all from me for today's show. I'm Daniela Cowan, and you've been listening to Conversations That Matter every Friday at 5 here on Radio Northern Beaches 88.7 and 90.3. Conversations That Matter is a show to share ideas and to open up conversations that affect all of us in our day-to-day lives. It aims to spread awareness, understanding, and bring healing to subject matters that we or the people close to us are dealing with. Catch you next time.